The Detroit Institute of Arts has been an integral part of Motor City's fabric since 1885. Today, the world-class museum has turned itself inside out, literally, by bringing art to the neighborhoods. The DIA also provides free school buses for classroom museum visits. The 658,000 square foot DIA and its 100 galleries is regarded as one of America's six premier art museums. Diego Rivera's legendary 1920s frescoes detailing Detroit's automotive industry with its subtle yet powerful metaphorical social commentary would be reason enough to plan a visit to the DIA. The museum is a showcase of rare and exotic multicultural and multinational works of art from prehistory through the 21st century. Salvador Salort Pons, DIA's director.
I am the director of the Detroit Institute of Arts.
What are you most proud of? Why should I come here?
You're going to see one of the best art collections in the United States. Especially, you will enjoy the most beautiful frescoes by Diego Rivera in North America.
Those frescoes specifically relate to Detroit and its history.
Those frescoes relate to Detroit. They illustrate one of the greatest things that Detroit has done for humankind, which is the creation of the automotive industry.
Tell us some of the other genres of art that are exceptional here.
We have a great collection of African-American art.
This is one of the foremost in America, isn't it?
It is, and we have a department that focuses in collecting and exhibiting and organizing and doing organizing exhibitions and doing research about African-American art.
Well, I know you have to go to a meeting, and I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy the visit.
Pam Marcel is the Director of Public Relations.
One of the things that you'll notice when you come to the DIA that's different than a lot of museums is the way we present the art to the public. In 2007, we had to do some extensive renovations, and during that time, we took down every work of art, and before we put it back, we analyzed, you know, we did a lot of visitor research, why people come, what they like. We rewrote every single label in the museum. We learned that after 60 words, people stop reading, you know, the font size and so on. Mm-hmm. So we decided to present the art to the 99% of our public that doesn't know anything about art and that might feel a little intimidated because they think they should know something. That just totally disappears once you come into the museum. The scholar, they can take care of themselves, but the everyday people, like I consider myself, mm-hmm. you'll learn information about some of the works of art, but you won't feel like you're being taught to. You know, for example, in the African galleries, they tell the story about the life cycle. So every culture has their birth, their death, their coming of age, their marriage rituals. So we present the art that we have to tell that story and then compare it to other cultures.
So it's a real cultural context.
It's cultural, yes.
This was really invented here, this cultural presentation.
Yes, yeah, way back in 1927 mm-hmm. when this building opened, the 1927 building opened, we put different culture groups together rather than saying, here's all the paintings, here's all the sculptures, which was radical at the time. Mm-hmm. And what we did in 2007 was also radical. Some museums have tried that with certain parts of their collection, but we did it, you know, we have 66,000 works of art. About 5,000 to 6,000 are on view at any given time. So we really did redid 100 galleries in this way that people can, it really helps people make these personal connections to the art.
How often do you rotate and turn over on view and not? Because you probably have, what, 90%?
90% is in storage, right. Yeah. Well, some things are on loan. We have requests for loans all the time. We have a beautiful Caravaggio that we often get requests for. We have a Bruegel that we don't loan because it's too fragile and too rare and it wouldn't travel well. The works on paper and photographs we switch out because they can only be on view several months at a time. Then they have to go back in storage for 3 years. For every month they're on view because they're fragile.
That's for degradation from environmental.
Environment. Our masterpieces, unless they're on loan, are always out. And then when we get new acquisitions, we'll switch those out as well.
I think it was the director was earlier talking about the outreach of our art literally into the community through your reproductions.
Right.
That's really cool.
Yes, it was. We started a program called Inside Out, also the first, where we took very lifelike reproductions of some of our most popular works and masterpieces, and we put them out in communities where people work and play and live. We had a picture, one that featured a dog prominently in a dog park. We had one woman write to us because she jogged and biked every day in this path in a suburb, and she saw this work of art, and it just like surprised her, and she said she looks forward to that every day. So it really is, it's to get the collection known, but also people have...
These are literal paintings in frames.
Yes.
That are outdoors,
yes,
set in a community.
Yes,
yeah, but nonetheless.
But very lifelike.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. So those have been so popular. People organize like bike tours of these, walking tours. So people learn about the works of art, and then, you know, hopefully they're encouraged to come to the museum to see the real thing. It's recently expanded to three other cities in the country because of the DIA success.
So you guys invented that.
Well, actually, the idea happened in London back in, I think, 2005. Mm-hmm. Our director, I think it was the National Gallery in London, put works of art out in public reproductions. Mm-hmm. And so we got that idea from them, but I don't think it had been done in the U.S. before.
And now it's
going really
viral.
Catching on. Yeah. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it's great. People love it, you know, and that's what we're about.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other thing. As we know, museums and galleries are sometimes criticized as being dust collectors, you know, kind
right.
of addicts of America or whatever,
right.
or culture. And this is very much not the case here. And it was proven a minute ago when you had a whole school group walk by us. And I understand that Detroit has made great entree to the community to make it accessible.
Yes, we definitely have done that. We provide actually free school buses for field trips. And many people know that teachers can't do field trips because they can't afford the bus. So because the Tri-County area supports us with a property tax, in return we give them free admission all the time, as well as free buses for seniors and students, mm-hmm. and other things that we do out in the community.
Yeah, and I've been to museums where it was $12 or $15 per person.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to bring right. a family of five.
Exactly.
You know, for an
it's
hour.
Prohibitive. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, and you can come back as many times as you want, you know, for the local residents.
Right.
My name is Pam Marcil, and I'm the Public Relations Director at the Detroit Institute of Arts. If anybody wants further information, we have a great website, and it's just dia.org. You can find lots of good information there, and we really hope all your listeners make it a point to visit.
Pam, thank you so much. What a pleasure to come see a cool world-class destination in Detroit.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Detroit, Michigan.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.